This is Solo Travel Talk, the hassle-free travel series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Klemets.
It was just okay. Just okay? Could this be the worst verdict about some destination or attraction or activity when traveling? Did we let our enthusiasm get too hyped? Did our hopes get too high? What do we do when our experience does not meet our expectations and our travel adventures leave us with a feeling of blah rather than bliss? On this episode of Solo Travel Talk, the hassle-free travel series, your solo travel advisor Astrid Klemets has some thoughts about managing expectations while traveling. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Do you need a vacation from your vacation? Well, stay tuned for some tips to avoid feeling a letdown from your solo travels. Astrid, we should tell everybody who's listening that this episode is brought to you by the Astrid Travel Club, the wonderful Astrid Travel Club. Everything's going great with the Travel Club, correct?
Oh, yeah. We are getting new members all over. I don't have anybody yet outside of the United States, but I'm waiting for that first member, but club is building in membership. We've got 7 great trips this year planned for people who join the club. I will talk a little bit more about the club later on in the episode, but if you're interested in a club that offers some really different and unique trips that I really think focus on cultural enrichment, go to my website, astridtravel.com, and you'll just click on the header where it says the Astrid Travel Club and it gives you all the information. But we'll talk more about the club later on in the episode.
But it's time right now to say thank you to the Astrid Travel Club for sponsoring Solo Travel Talk. Okay, the blahs, Astrid. I'm actually really excited. And listeners, I should have you know that before we started recording, Astrid said, this one's going to go deep. And I'm excited for that. I always like it when we go into sort of more rich territory. I've often had the thought when we're working on this show that you and your positive attitude is probably a key to you being a happy traveler. So I was hoping you could start us off. Is avoiding a travel letdown a matter of attitude and perspective?
For most part, yes. Your attitude and your perspective really is the key. Because there's no such thing as a dream trip where everything you do, see, experience is wonderful. Basically, your travel expectations don't live up to the reality of the place that you're traveling to. You end up experiencing aggravating crowds. Mm. There's traffic, bad weather, environmental downers like pollution and unsanitary conditions. You get sick, or you really just don't like the food. In some places, you can't get comfortable in the culture. When people are really basically out of their comfort zone, they really react differently. Mm. Some people love it, and some people are ready to go home, basically. Know that there's no guarantee you will like a place that you're traveling to. And when travel disappointment starts to kick in, that's when your ability to change your perspective and attitude is absolutely paramount and is the key. Okay, so I'm going to give you some tips on how to deal with travel disappointment just to kind of warm you up to this show, because this show deals with travel disappointment, blahs. I mean, you know, trips that just don't go right and for what reasons and how to deal with that when that strikes. Because like life, it's not going to go smoothly. No trip is without a hitch. I can tell you that. So here are some tips that will help you dealing with just basic travel disappointment. First of all, is just accept that you're initially disappointed. I mean, you say, well, this just accept it. And then take a step back and then strive to change your perspective. Don't dwell on the fact that things are not as wonderful as you thought they'd be. Just don't make a mountain out of, a molehill. Number 2 is start to readjust your expectations. take off the rose-colored glasses and all these things that you had envisioned from their these fabulous photos that you've seen on social media and everything else. It kind of painted a picture that really is not real. And accept the reality of the place as you see it. You know, just like your house or your home. You love it, but sometimes it's messy. You know what I'm saying? But you still love it. So you have to readjust into it's okay the way the reality is. Then start focusing on positive things, things that you are enjoying or you're interested in. Kind of start narrowing your gaze a little bit. If you like the food, get more into the food. If you don't have a food tour planned, ask your concierge, are there any food tours? These are great ways to learn a lot more about what you're eating. Take a cooking class. Say you love creativity and the crafts that you're seeing at this particular destination. Ask the concierge to help you find things that will make you more learned about how they're doing the crafts, where you can see them, maybe meeting a craftsman or two. You know, start focusing on things that are speaking to you. Because when you do this, when you focus on the positive, the negative seem to diminish. And that really happens. It's like anything else. You don't like this teacher, and you have to have this class the whole year. But if you start focusing in, you know, on meeting other kids in the class that, you know, are struggling, and y'all, you know, start bonding together, and you, you know, you end up making an A in the class. If you just focus in on that, you're going to make a C. I mean, you're just going to, everything's going to kind of, so focus on something positive. And then, you know, the other negative will not be quite as bothersome. Number four is get some extra sleep and take more breaks during the day to just kind of, like they say, sit a spell so you can relax and regroup. Because when you're tired, everything becomes less wonderful. It just really does. And that might be the root of what is giving you the blahs. It's really not totally the place, but you're tired. And so nothing can make you that excited. So, you know, make sure that you're getting enough rest and you're taking enough breaks. Then the next thing is discuss your concerns with the hotel concierge. Talk to him about you're not having a good, time. And, you know, this is what you have on your itinerary. These are the things you like to do or, you know, whatever. And get his input. And say you like to shop or go to the art galleries. Do those things. You don't have to do all the must-dos. Maybe you want to pare those down. So ask the concierge, how can I change the dynamic, what's going on with my trip, and I don't like this. And you'll be surprised. That might be the trick to change the pace of what you're doing, add some other things you didn't know you could do, and your whole trip turns around. Okay, number six is look for things that are familiar. Starbucks, that's my big thing. I have to have that good cup of coffee, so I'm always wanting to know where the closest Starbucks is. Get you a Starbucks app. Or, you know, Zara, if you like to shop at H&M and those kind of stores. What you're used to. Like I always say, go find somewhere to get a good hamburger. You know, a lot of times when people are just tired of Asian food or Thai food or whatever, all they need is a hamburger, Coke, and French fries.
Like that's like the ultimate comfort food,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and then you're okay. Yeah. You know, and things start looking better. And then number seven, if you don't like your accommodations and you can change, then think about changing because unfortunately, a lot of people, and this is not a downer for Airbnb, but, you know, they use an Airbnb a rental instead of going into a hotel where they have a concierge and they feel safer, and they have people that, you know, they can talk to, and they're not as isolated, or they just don't like this place. And it's very important that you feel comfortable there and that you like it there. So if that happens to you road and you're disappointed, don't just wallow in it if you can change. If you can change, what I recommend is going to, you know, the tourist bureau and asking them for help. Or if you have your computer, get on the computer and book something with booking.com or Expedia, a hotel tonight or whatever, and change. Because a bad place to stay, it will lead to the trip being a lot less enjoyable. Okay, number 8. Take some specialty tours. That might not have been on your agenda at first, but if you don't like the place, maybe you just really have not gotten through that culture shock and you just don't have enough background information as well as just insight into what's in front of you. I'm an extremely experienced traveler. I still like to do the hop-on, hop-off buses. I usually do that if I go to a completely new culture and I've traveled the long way or I've flown a lot and I'm kind of tired, have jet lag, but I can't go to sleep because, you know, I need to stay up until at least 9 o'clock. I will ask the concierge, you know, is there hop on, hop off bus? And do I have enough time to take a ride on it? Those are great ways to just sit, listen to the commentary, ride all around, kind of get your reconnaissance or your bearings. You hear, you know, they always have nice music, and you know, it's typically reflective of the culture. But that gives you kind of a first introduction into where you'll be and what you can really expect. Okay, so you get to see it kind of from above, you know, if you're sitting outside. And I love it. I do it a lot. It does kind of enter me into the place. But these small specialty tours like food tours or wine tours or cooking classes, walking tours that have a special focus, these are great because they're small groups. You probably will meet somebody. Or at least you'll have some interaction with other people that are interested in the same activity. So that can turn the disappointment of a place around because you start focusing in on some things that it's basically like a mini field trip. And your mind starts to accept a lot of things that you were kind of like having a barrier to. Because that's some of why you're disappointed because you think, oh, I don't want like stuff like that. But you cannot get into that mindset. So if you take these little specialty tours and ask the concierge what he recommends, especially if you tell him, you know, I just don't like that. And you tell him, they won't take offense, most of them, but they will really think, well, you know, I'm going to change this traveler's point of view, you know, because they don't know why they're missing this, okay? So basically, like I said, travel is like life. It has its ups and downs, and I really believe both the positive and some negative travel moments combine to make a trip memorable. Now, if you have too many of them, it'll be memorable, but not for why you want it to be memorable. But you'll still learn something from that. But you have to refuse to let your negative emotions damper or ruin a trip. And your goal is to manage your disappointments. And really, that is going to be the bulk of this podcast and what I'm going to focus on is how to help you get through all of the disappointment, the blahs, and really make every trip that you go on something that enriches your life, changes you in a way that you couldn't be changed in any other method than having experienced a place and traveled to a place that may, you know, have been very difficult for you to do, accept, and experience at first. So that's what the podcast is really going to be about.
Well, and I was thinking too that, you know, some people might think, oh, well, hassle, what does this really have to do with hassle? But I think like the spirit of it is, it's so disappointing to hear people say it's just not worth it to travel. All the things you have to overcome and then to be let down on your trip. That's really, it's that it makes it people not want to go.
Oh, yeah. Like Venice. They have this fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
This is the architecture. And this is a city where there are no really streets or cars, which is fabulous.
Right.
And they have beautiful Italian culture there, and the history is so rich, and they have a beautiful handmade Italian goods there, and the food, you know, Italian food can't be bad. It can't be anything farther from the truth now. It is so tragic what has happened to Venice.
The pigeons alone are a turnoff to some people for going to Venice.
Oh, yeah, 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 because they're attack pigeons. Let me tell you, in St. Mark's Square, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably so mad at all this tourism, over tourism, too. They're ready to start a full-fledged campaign to get every other people out of here.
Yeah, but that's the fantasy, you know, that you've had too much of a fantasy about what your trip's going to be like, yeah.
Yeah, and you can't get away from it because there are lots of things that play into it. First of all, you want to escape, and then you're bombarded with social media and magazines and all this stuff that is just geared to selling you on travel, okay? You have got yourself in a state if you're going to go to some faraway Shangri-La or heaven. And really, there's no place that's like that. I mean, there might be snippets of experiences or magical moments that you have, but that is never the case. You know, it's so funny. You'll see a photograph. It's so beautiful, but you'll stand in the same place where you took the photograph, and it's not that beautiful when you're standing there. But when you go and look at the photograph, lady, you'll say, that was beautiful. That's some of what you have to understand, that, you know, reality is a lot different than what you don't know or you fantasize to be until you get there. So when you get there, don't be disappointed. Just shift your whole consciousness to getting into the reality of where you are. And then it will start to blossom in all kinds of different ways. It'll touch your different senses, etc.
Well, that is a great advice. And then also in talking about Venice, that kind of sets us up to talk about, I know you have some thoughts about destinations, that there really are some overhyped destinations and overhyped sites, like particular attractions. And it happens. And so how, Astrid, do you deal with these in your own travels?
Okay, well, the overhypedness, most all of the really must-do sites are overhyped. I mean, from the Great Wall of China, which when you go there, typically, there's so many people there, you can't really see off and see the whole thing right. It's too many groups and tour buses and people there, and it's unbelievable that this was done a long time ago, this wall. You just don't get it. You don't get it, okay? Same thing is, like, say if you go to Paris and you go to the Louvre, and everybody says, you must see the Mona Lisa. She is just like, this is the painting that changed the consciousness of the visual arts or painting in that era. You get there, and first of all, there's glass over it. There's so many people. You can't get close. You really can't get a picture, and you think, God, she's not really beautiful. Or she's not doing anything for me. So you have worked yourself up, and then you go there, and you have this experience. It kind of makes you, I don't want to say like brokenhearted, but there's something that, is this all there is to life or something like that? But the problem was you really weren't grounded in the reality of really what you were going to see, how it is now being able to be shown, and what those aggravations are. And maybe really just being too modern and too removed from the essence in the era that it was created. You don't get it. You know what I'm saying? And so that might be a lot of the reason why you just think, that was a waste of time. That sounds really sad to say that. But that happens in so many ways. Or you go to the Magic Kingdom. Now, you know, the Magic Kingdom is not only for kids. There are a lot of older people that like to go to the Magic Kingdom or enjoy that kind of thing. Well, when every ride or everything you have to do, you wait in a line for 2 hours. I mean, that's no fun. I don't care how fun the ride is or how much escape, you know, or pleasure. That's absolutely ridiculous. A horrendous line everywhere. It's terrible. A place like Stonehenge, that's a place that's been hyped a lot because it's a mysterious place. And people really, you know, they still are struggling with how it got there, why it was done, blah, blah, blah. And it's in the beautiful area of England. But they have all these people that come there. And so you cannot feel the vibe there. You cannot recalibrate or whatever you want to do there because it's just too many people. So it's really sad. But these sites, you know, because there's so many people that are seeing these sites that you can't even get a good photo. It's really getting to be a crisis, to tell you the truth. So there's not a lot, Catherine, you can do when you're at these overhyped places. You can, there are a few little basic tips I can give you, like get there real early when it first opens or when nobody's there, like at Stonehenge, get there as close as you can to when nobody will be there in the daylight. Or say a real famous place like the Bamboo Forest outside of Tokyo. If you're not there, the one of the first people when it opens, oh my gosh, there's so many people there. But this is a magnificent natural forest of these, the tallest bamboo you've ever seen. And when you get in there, it just feels so comforting. There's something about it that's got a lot of energy in there. But there's so many people. It's pitiful. It is really terrible. So, but if you can get there when it first opens, or like say at the Bamboo Forest or a museum when it's about an hour before closing time, a lot of people have already left, okay? Then if you can purchase VIP tickets or skip the line tickets, or you can get away from the crowds, do it. It's worth the money. Don't even think about it. Do not even think about it. Do that, because otherwise you're going to miss half of it just because there's too many people. Okay. And then the third one is know before you go, you will have to exercise patience and lower your expectations about fully enjoying the sight because there's just too many people. So you're going to have to go with that flow or go with the no flow because it's going to take you a lot longer to get into it, to see it, and then it's going to be somewhat disappointing, you know, and I know this sounds depressing, but this phenomenon is basically caused by over-tourism, and this over-tourism phenomenon is hitting almost every famous travel destination now because there's so many people traveling, and flights are so much more, is cheaper, and with Airbnb and all these different sharing opportunities, people are traveling. You know, so the beautiful photos you see in the guidebooks, the brochures, the internet, it's really not reality. And, you know, they paint this unrealistic picture that you think you're going to experience. So what I suggest is you need to prioritize what your must-do activities are and then supplement your trip with a lot of other interesting things about your destination and its culture. Other things, not, you know, the must-dos. Get into maybe what's going on in the theater. If you like theater, there might be a couple of things that you could go see at night, even if you can't understand the language. Like I remember when I was in Hanoi, and I'm a former music major, and I went to this music performance. It's an ancient type of vocal and instrumental music, basically. And it's done usually about three or four people. And the sounds are very strange to the Western musical culture. And a lot of different things, but the way they do it, I mean, it all has a story, and it has a
meaning
and a melody and everything that's in any kind of. But I went to this, and just by going and experiencing this whole new sound, and they invited, there weren't that many people on this particular specialty tour. I think we were about six. And they got us to come up, and they tried to get us to blend in, to do various things, to kind of create our own music. And really, and they all dressed a certain way that they used to dress a long time ago when it was very popular. Mm. It was beautiful that night. I wish I could remember, if I would go Google it, it would come up what the type of music it was. But it was basically like the beginnings of ancient Eastern opera in Vietnam. You know, and in Hanoi, they have a big opera theater, etc. But it was really, really something. So what I'm saying is supplement what you're doing during the day, these must-do sites, with other things that will give you a real different and more interesting look into the grandeur of why this place is special.
It sounds almost like enrichment activities.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, say that this particular place is known for this fabulous cathedral that was built on these two ley lines that came in, intersected, and they had all these miracles that happened, or something that draws people there. But there are other things in that area that there for you to experience. And that's why I brought this little example out of what I did in Hanoi that really was, I really enjoyed it because it was so different. Mm. But it was extremely well done, and there weren't very many people there, in contrast to the puppet theater, which is a tourist destination. They do water puppets. And this is one of the only places in the world they really do water puppets. So they have a whole theater, and adults go there, tourists go there, kids go there. And they have all of these these puppet shows with music and everything like that. And they all tell these different tales and stories because in Vietnam, they're big storytellers. And it was enjoyable because it was different, but it was a tourist trap. I hate to say that, but really, that's the way it was. Now, maybe if it was done in a smaller theater with smaller group, and it would be more authentic. Mm. But to me, I enjoyed doing it, but not like I enjoyed this other thing. So you need to supplement yourself with these overhyped things, because the hype factor will never change, because it is meant to get your money. It's meant to seduce you to open your wallet when you travel. So just be prepared that a lot of things that they say you must do are over or overhyped. And they become, I don't want to say trite, but kind of like, you think, oh God, that wasn't that good. Yeah, so you have to be careful about that. And like I said at the beginning of the show, or a little bit after we got into it, ask your concierge. Ask him, is this really good, or is this hyped up? Or should I go to this, say if you want to go to Irish dancing, an evening of Irish dancing, and you get to eat Irish food and drink beer. Well, there are some shows that are so tourist-oriented, but there are other shows that give you much more the quality of what it's really like. That's where you want some good inside information to help you know which ones to go to, so you don't end up in the overhyped tourist traps. that you get the same feeling as everybody else. Oh, that was good, but so, you know, I could have done something else. Or I wish that wasn't as good as I thought it would be.
Well, let's flip this on its head a little bit. So you talked about the overhyped. What tips do you have for us for uncovering those hidden gems, those things that don't get a lot of hype? I always wonder, like, how do you find these hidden gems if they're hidden?
Now you're hitting a nerve with me because besides my really, I have a formidable positive travel attitude. Yeah. I'm a very positive person normally. And so I just don't ever want to feel negative or whatever. I'm not really hooked up that way. It is a blessing, I think, that I just inherited. But besides this attitude, I really relish in finding hidden travel gems, you know, to make my travel experiences unique and memorable. And, you know, as a novice traveler, I know you don't even know how to start in finding them, but I'll give you a couple of tips or things that you should do that kind of like you do this, then this leads to another thing, then this leads to another thing, and voila, there's the hidden gem. Okay, the first thing is you just have to take the time to do the research. You have to do a lot of research. I mean, really, that is where it all starts. We're so fortunate now, you know, basically to have the internet and Google. So all you have to do is get on the computer and start searching off the beaten path destinations. Mm. Just as simple as that. Or off the beaten path activities like in New Orleans or wherever you're going. Just with those few words, you're going to come up with a lot of unique things that you're not going to see in your typical guidebook. Okay. And then there also, when you're Googling, Google Wiki Travel or your destination in Wiki Travel, WIKI Travel. That's just like Wikipedia, but it's geared to travel. Well, this Wiki Travel gives you a lot of things on there that's not covered again in standard travel brochures, because a lot of the travel agent industry are owned by big travel conglomerates. So they're taking you in their buses to their places using their people, their hotels, their restaurants. I mean, you really are just kind of captive into what they are providing you to experience. But there's so much more out there if you don't get trapped into those kinds of systems. And I'm not saying they're totally bad either. For some people, that's all they want. They don't want any more than that. That's okay. You know, but if you're not like that and you really want more authenticity and you tend to be more critical and you don't want to get blah or be disappointed, well, there are other things that you can do that you can find things that would interest you or would lead you to many times the reason for your trip. A lot of times when you do something that was not a must do or something a little off the, you know, not the normal, is when some things start really kind of evolving for you. So Wiki Travel is good for a long list of a lot of things that you won't typically see in your typical travel information. Pinterest, that's another good source. Just enter your destination. Now, you're going to get a lot of photos and articles and everything, but create a board off a beaten path ideas or hidden gems board and see what happens. Pinterest is a really strange kind of phenomenon, but a lot of people have gotten a lot of good ideas about all kinds of things that have upped their lifestyle. So that's another idea. Then there's certain bloggers that focus in on off the beaten path information. So you can just Google off the beaten path bloggers in Singapore or whatever you're looking for, or hidden gem bloggers that focus on Singapore or whatever. There's untourist guides and there's secret city trails and and this kind of thing. But and they'll talk about foodie hotspots where the locals go, or where you find street art, or where the artists really are, and any unusual thing about a particular destination. The more you know all these unusual things and then the must-dos, then you can create, well, you know, I'm going to go explore this hidden gem, you know, because this really seems cool after I've, you know, gone to Angkor Wat or whatever. So that's another way to find hidden gems, is find these bloggers that are out there looking for hidden gems. This is a great suggestion. There is a fabulous website called Atlas Obscura. Well, they tout themselves as being the definitive guide to the world's hidden wonders. Ooh. Oh, it is. This is Hidden Gems website, and it's like on a really high level, like National Geographic. Oh, yeah, it's fabulous. Fabulous resource. They not only have wonderful trips like Mexico's monarch butterfly migration, Croatia, art and architecture in Croatia, Silk Road cities of Central Asia. They have all of these trips that are focused on a theme or something that's really special about the place. And they're not touristy.
Mm.
This is great. These people are really doing a great job with uncovering a lot of things that are indigenous that really have a lot of substance in where you're traveling to. They also have a whole list of experiences in different places. Like if you're going, say, to Dublin and you want to do off the beaten path or go to Hidden Gems, they have a whole list of the Hidden Gems or off the beaten path activities in Dublin. And they cover lots of cities all over the world. So that's a great resource.
I love it.
Yes, they are really good. And they also have very good travel videos. So you can see what they're talking about before you decide you want to go. And their videos aren't like, you know, making them like Hollywood movies. They are very good videos, high quality, but they're not fantasy or too much or over the top type of things. But, you know, they'll focus on or local markets, and they'll tell you all about the market and why it's, you know, interesting, or a weird place where there were several miracles that, you know, that haven't been written about, and all these different things, okay? Hiking, scenic trails, where they think there's, you know, these trails are really scenic and why and this kind of thing. And also being enlightened about the local art and cultural scene. You know, I can't talk about this website anymore. That it is really, I think, is high quality and really excellent in this particular category, is finding hidden gems or off the beaten path things that really have some substance. You have to put in the time to research for these hidden gems. But also, you know, ask your concierge for his or her suggestions. You know, because the concierge is really your assistant when you're on the road. That's one of the reasons why I always talk about, I like to stay in nice hotels that have really good concierge. Because it's really my way of having somebody there to help me fine-tune my trip and change things if I need them changed, or tell me what not to do, etc. Then also, I have written here, hidden gems typically take you away from the crowds and they help you connect with the local life, which really, that lays the foundation for a great trip. You know, if you're just being carted off to all of these things that, you know, that are must-dos or whatever, and with all these people, I guarantee you're going to get disappointed to a certain extent. You just say, I spent all this money and blah, whew. But other suggestions to help you with hidden gems, like I said, concierge suggestions. Then converse with locals. I mean, you know, I'm forever. I'll be in a shop and I'll be looking at something, and then you know, I know it's kind of like getting late and I better eat lunch, and I'll just go to the sales lady if I feel comfortable around her and say, "Can you recommend a really good restaurant around here or whatever?" I tell you, the locals can give you some of the best information. So ask people what they think, or like, say, if you're sitting down in a restaurant having a cup of coffee, doing a coffee break in the afternoon, and there's some people around, you feel comfortable, and you'll say, "Well, you know, are you traveling, or you're from here?" Or, and especially if they're from there, or the waiter who's waiting on you, ask them, where do you think is the best place to go eat tonight? Or what's really cool to do here? Just start up this kind of conversation. You'll get a lot of feedback. And so if it piques your interest, then you go back to the concierge when you go back to the hotel and say, "Look, I heard about this Fado Music Club where you can go eat dinner and listen to this indigenous Portuguese music. Should I do that?" You know what I'm saying? And what would be a good place that, as a solo traveler, I could do? You know, I might have not realized that there was a whole genre of different music that was basically ethnic Portuguese music. But I found out by just starting a conversation and asking the server, the waiter, or whoever was sitting around me, you know, "What do y'all think is cool to do?" So that's a really one of the ways to find it. And then the good old taxi drivers, you know, they're forever wanting to talk to me because, you know, they like to talk to single women that are, you know, they're taken to the hotel and they're trying to find out if they want to find a date or what their deal is. And they always get on my nerves. So I always turn it around on them. I shut them up and start asking them, you know, this, that, and the other, and get them off, because they usually want to kind of take you to certain spots where they get a little,
you
know, you know, they're all trying to do something, and you can't. But I hate when they start it with me because I'm older, and that is getting so boring.
Regular listeners will know that Astrid has some very strong feelings about taxis and taxi drivers, and if you're a new listener, you've just gotten a little taste of Astrid's views.
Oh, yeah. I avoid taxis as much as I can.
Okay, but the point here is sometimes they can be a good resource for you. Gotcha. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, we won't digress. Okay. Then another tip is really to adapt a slow travel mentality. Mm. Don't think you got to see everything, because you really don't. If you go to India, you got to see the Taj Mahal, okay? You know, if you don't go to Agra and see that, well, you probably have to go back to India if you want to have, if you have a bucket list. But there are a whole lot of things about India that are intriguing and wonderful that you don't have time to see. So you have to pick the things that you feel like are worth your time and not wear yourself out and try to do everything. You want to try to get deep into the culture, but in a way that will strike a nerve with you. You know, if you just splatter it all out and go to the shrines and the markets and the food and all of that, that's good. But if you can't absorb all that, maybe you should just slow it down and do one thing one day, and then kind of in the afternoon, take it easy. Read a book, buy a novel that maybe is set in this country, and just kind of take it in that way, because you're going to take in a lot more than you think. So, you know, that's another way to find hidden gems, is not to jam it all over the place, because, you know, typically you're going to be where all these hordes of people are. Okay. And then leave gaps in your itinerary for this kind of like people watching, you know, kind of just relaxing, you know, having a long cup of coffee or tea or ice cream or whatever you like to do. So you can kind of let serendipity take its course. You might have a place like planned for dinner, but if you have sat in this cafe and you end up talking to a waiter and he says, "God, you have got to go to this place. It's the newest, hottest thing, And let me tell you why. And it resonates with you. So if you wouldn't have sat there and lingered and let serendipity come into play in somebody telling you, and you didn't know you were going to go to this place to take a break, you just decided to walk in there because it looked nice. That's how you find some great things. I mean, I'll never forget my last day in Lisbon. I had planned my last activity was to eat at this Michelin star restaurant. I mean, it was touted as wonderful, small, everything. So I had worked myself up. I had walked so much that day. I didn't eat that much because I wanted to be starving when I got to this restaurant. So I got there like at about 6 o'clock, and that's very early for people in Lisbon to eat, but I thought it opened then. And when I was approaching the park where it was around, it was on a beautiful little park in a real upscale area of Lisbon. I go and I find it closed for renovation. I thought I was not reading right. I was so hungry, I was almost completely fainting. Okay, so then I went, well, I have got to change course. So I started walking up the hill because in Lisbon, it's a city of 7 hills. You just don't walk flat. You go up and down all the time. And there was no trolley or tram to take me up. So I had to trudge up this hill. So I was trudging up this hill and I was trying to find somewhere to eat. And a lot of places weren't open till 8. And then, you know, nothing was coming. And I mean, this was after about 45 minutes of walking. I was getting completely delirious. I was almost hallucinating, but I mean, dizzy. I was so hungry. You can't believe it. And so I got to the very top of the hill, and there's a famous church there. I want to say it's St. Roch, but I'm not sure. And on the right, there was a little sign that said Taverna. I think it was St. Roch or whatever. And I really couldn't believe it. So I walk up a couple of stairs because you had to go up a couple of stairs and then go down because it was like in a keller. So I go down and I knock on the door and the guy opens the door. I said, "Are you open?" And he said, "Oh, yes." He said, "Come on in." I mean, I thought I was going to pass out. I wanted to cry. I was so excited because I was so hungry. So this place was one of the highlights of my Lisbon trip. It was a beautiful, it was a local place where all the soccer stars come to eat. It had all of these pictures of all these famous athletes and these gorgeous Mallorca tile all over. The food was real taverna food. I mean, and then another thing to top it all off, the only thing in Lisbon that I didn't eat the whole time that I wanted to was sardines. And I looked at the menu and there was grilled sardines on the menu. So I had a salad, grilled sardines, and some kind of, I think it was potatoes with basil or something on them, bread, butter, and wine. And I was the first person in the restaurant, but as I sat there, the locals were coming in. I lingered there an hour and a half. I had several glasses of wine. I ate, and it's all because of serendipity, because that restaurant closed, and I just had to go with the flow. And all of a sudden, at the right time, this was a perfect ending for my wonderful time in Lisbon. So serendipity is very real and very important to find hidden gems. There's no way that restaurant is going to be touted as a must-do in Lisbon. But let me tell you something. You don't get a more wonderful experience in Lisbon, a more real experience than that taverna. And I think it was Taverna St. Roch. I'm not sure, but it's a church right there at the top of the hill. And I do think there were some miracles there or whatever, you know. So how you uncover travel or hidden travel gems is by research, your concierge, the locals, and serendipity.
I love it.
Yeah, that's how you do it. And they surface. And that's how I probably have half of my travel experience has been from those sources ending up serendipity a lot. And I've had, I mean, that's why I'm still doing this. I'm doing this podcast because it just is so life-giving, and I've enjoyed it so much, and I've grown so much, and I can't stress it enough that it's worth the effort.
Speaking of doing the travel, we want to thank our sponsor for this episode, and that is the Astrid Travel Club. Astrid, there's a France trip coming up.
Oh, I have a wonderful trip to Paris. It's from the 2nd of April to the 10th. And this particular trip is going to focus on fashion, as well as some fine art and some food experiences. But like I shared at the beginning of the show, is the Astrid Travel Club offers theme-focused trips for small groups. And this is for solo travelers who don't really want to travel totally solo, but they don't want to be in these big tour groups and going to these set hotels and these set must-dos and have a okay experience, but not really get into what there is to experience, okay? This trip that I am putting together in April has that focus of fashion, food, and fine art. Mm. So go to my website, AstridTravel.com, look under the Astrid Travel Club tab, and scroll down to the Paris trip if you want to see it. It's got a lot of varied activities. We even take a day trip to Claude Monet's home where he lived and had his magnificent garden, which he used to, he said he loved his gardens more than painting. So what I'm saying is we have a lot of, you know, a variety of what we'll be doing to immerse yourself in French culture. But the focus will be on fashion and how you can apply what you experience and learn about what makes French fashion always the best. Whether you spend no money or very little money or a lot of money. And what are their secrets that are always timeless? And they really have been through the years. So I'm very excited about this trip. And if you love fashion or you want to go to Paris and with a different focus, check my trip out. I can't explain it or rave about it enough because I've done it several times with this focus and I know it so well. You get to do another great thing about this trip. You get to walk a lot. Paris is the most wonderful place to walk. So you're going to be walking down the Champs-Élysées, down Avenue Montaigne. You're going to walk, you know, across to the Left Bank and Saint. You're just going to walk all over. And by the end, you'll know a lot about Paris. And then what that will do to you is it will start your basic addiction to it because there's nowhere like it. I mean, you can just hop on a plane and go there with no agenda and just being there. There's something about the vibe there, the food there, the smells, the beautiful architecture. You don't need anything else. I mean, it's really special. So, you know, my trip is a good way to get another slant to it, to enjoy what I think is really probably still the most magnificent city in the world.
So if this sounds as glorious to you as it does to Astrid saying it, the Astrid Travel Club is probably for you. So we will put the link in there so you can go ahead and find out more about the Paris trip.
Yes, and I can almost guarantee you, there will be no disappointments.
No blahs. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We should have a no blah.
Because my trips are not full of blah or full of, they're not boring.
Yeah, and no.
They really are. But we give you free time so we don't overdo it. But I mean, it's like you are discovering a lot of interesting new things in the types of trips that I do. That's the only way I enjoy experiencing
the Astrid flair. So thank you to the Astrid Travel Club for sponsoring this Solo Travel Talk episode. Okay, we just said a word a moment ago, Astrid, and that is blah. So things sometimes on a travel trip can be a little bit blah. Maybe you get a couple blah meals or you have a couple blah days, and it just feels like maybe the whole trip is starting on a little bit of a downward spiral. So I'm wondering if you have some thoughts
on
that.
Yeah, I mean, Catherine, the scenario basically sounds awful. And like I just said, I don't think I've ever experienced a blah trip because I love to have fun. And I love adventure. So I would not ever allow myself to self-indulge in blah, okay? Because, well, first of all, I usually don't take any kind of organized tours in terms of trip packages. I go on specialty tours, but I don't put myself in positions where I could be disappointed. I take more control over basically what I'm doing. So, you know, I don't have too many blah meals. I mean, when you travel, you're going to have meals that you don't like because you ordered the wrong thing or you're not used to the food or whatever. But a couple of wrong things, then you should be well on your way to know, I like rice this way, or, you know, I can always eat pho. It will taste fabulous, you know, and that kind of thing. So, but if you get stuck with, say, in a big trip and you don't have choices and this kind of thing, and then I can see that. So I can see how it can happen really to inexperienced travelers or really people who've traveled a lot. They just get, nothing excites them anymore. You know what I'm saying? So when this travel, what I call the black cloud, appears, you really have to be determined that you're going to seek the sunshine and turn the whole tenor of the trip around. So I have a couple of travel blah remedies. I can't say I've never had some downers or whatever, but these are what I suggest that if you feel like things are blah. Which, you know, I just can't hardly say that when we talk about travel, but I understand it. First of all, when that's happening to you, you have to decide to live in the moment. Now, you know, you hear a lot about this being mindful, and this is a very kind of current topic because lots of people, unfortunately, do experience depression. A lot of times that's key or related to you're living in the past and you're not really facing what's really going on in your life, or you're always anxious because you're worried about the future. So this living in the moment and being mindful about what you're doing and what you're experiencing helps ground you and helps keep you in reality, okay? So you won't think about problems at home or your job or personal problems, because that a lot of times if some of what's going on to give you the blahs, it's not as much about the place as about what's going on deeper inside of you. So if you begin to really focus on being mindful and just stay in the now, the blahs will start to either solve themselves or go away. And there's a really good book that I read 10 years ago or more, Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. And he has some great tips to how to have a fulfilled life, you know, how to get out of worry and the blahs. And I think it's a very good book to read. And you can use his tips when you travel and when things are starting becoming blah, because usually there's no reason, real reason for that, except you're doing the wrong things or there's something wrong going on inside. Okay. That's my take on it. Another thing is to seek help or advice. Like I've said before, go to your concierge, tell them, you know, have a heart to heart talk. Say, I don't really like this place and help me like it, you know, and this kind of thing. And then also talk to the service personnel, like I said, the waiters, the shopkeepers, this kind of thing. You'd be surprised. They'll turn you on to what they think is the best. Then, like I said, tell the concierge all your feelings, get his advice, how to change your destination's experience, you know, fun day tours, activities, things to do that would also connect you with the locals and other travelers, and not these canned things, things that really do kind of get you one-on-one. You know, there are places like in Cartagena, Colombia, they have women that do cooking classes for groups of four, very small, and that you come to their home and they'll teach you how to do several dishes and you'll do it and then you'll eat in their home with them. It's a really wonderful experience. I mean, you really will absorb a lot about Cartagena and Colombia and what makes those people happy and content and learn about their food. And it's a poor country, you know, and they've had a lot of political problems. So my point is ask the concierge to help you do things where you do interact with locals or other travelers in an authentic way, okay? Also, ask the concierge or whoever you're seeking information about unique things where your particular interests lie. You know, you might not want to go to a cooking class because you don't cook, like me. I don't cook, so I never go to cooking classes. Everybody loves them, and I never go. But don't hold that against me.
But, we like the food part of it.
I like the food. I love good food. But go where your interests are. Like, I love music, so I like to listen to a lot of different music, and I like live performances. I love the visual arts. I'm not artistic, but I love it. I love beautiful things and interesting things, creative people who do stuff that, I mean, I would have never thought of anything like that. I just love doing stuff like that. That's where I get advice on where to go to find those kinds of things that I love. So that will help you a lot to get out of your blahs. Mm. If you start doing those things and not so many of the must-dos. Like I said, if you go to India, you must do Taj Mahal, even if there are a lot of people or whatever. I mean, it's such a magical place, even though it's not as magical because of all the tourists, but still. But then there are lots of other things in India that they might tell you is must-do that it's not. Focus on what you want to learn from India. They have a fabulous spiritual legacy and continuing spiritual essence about India that many people go to India just to get on a higher plane or you know, expand their consciousness. You know, and that would be enough for a trip to India rather than doing a whole bunch of must-dos. Don't go so fast. You know what I'm saying? And do things that are in your natural interest. Mm. Not just pre-programmed things. Go to a concert or a theater. That's what I like. I do that a lot. And it's very uplifting to me. Like I said, I was a music major, but there's something about music or live performance that everybody in the theater is gripped in the energy of what you're seeing and hearing. Very good way to get you out of a blah. It really is. Rather than going back to your hotel and maybe sitting in the bar and having one glass of wine and said, well, I guess I got to go to sleep now. Then I'll wake up early and start over. That is a really nice way to spend the evening. Also, hire a private guide to help you explore the destination on a deeper level. I did that a lot when I was in China. It was one of the top aspects of my whole trip to China was the interaction with her for a couple of days. So if you're having the blahs, hire a private guide and a driver. It might cost you a little bit more. You think it's not in your budget. Look, save on something else and do that. You will be so happy you did, because I guarantee you it will be money well spent. That's another tip. Okay, let's see. The next thing is maybe you just take a day off not to do anything. Maybe that's your problem. Maybe that's why you have the blahs. And let yourself sleep late. You might want to go to a spa or, you know, shop. Just don't do anything that you're supposed to do there per se. Read a book, journal, anything that really can take you and help you shift your mood or your energy level. because you might just be too tired to enjoy yourself, and it's made everything blah. And that happens a lot of times. If you're overloaded or you're still in culture shock, you really haven't gotten through that barrier of, you're not so sure you like all this, and it's kind of dirty, and I'm not sure, are these people really nice, and I'm scared I might eat something, I'm going to get food poisoning. I mean, you have all of these things that you haven't been able to accept or deal with, but it subsides after about the third or fourth day. And those things that bothered you, don't see them anymore. They just become normal and they don't bother you, okay? So, if you get to a point where you just are on overload, or you're having a problem, just don't do anything one day. You'd be surprised. That is sometimes all you need to really just be ready to roll. I'm telling you. So that's a tip. Then also try and determine, and this is the deeper thing, try to determine if there's something deeper within you that's going on, that's contributing to your less than chipper mood. If you start kind of feeling like that, stay connected with your family and your friends. Maybe you're just feeling lonely and you're homesick. But this usually will pass. It does. But you have to decide that it will pass. Because your attitude's everything at this point. You can just kind of check out. Just be kind of in a depressed frame of mind. But you really have to realize that travel, especially solo travel, has a way of stimulating unresolved personal issues. And many times these issues will surface when you're away from home. They really will. Sometimes you don't even know you have this issue. So, when you're experiencing this, because it will happen. It will happen. If you travel solo and for any period of time, you'll go through these things. This I know to be a fact because it's happened to me many times. And almost every solo traveler I talk to can give you stories of these scenarios. So when this happens, let your emotions come out. I always have an extra glass of wine. I'll take a hot bath and I'll just go to bed. I'll just go to bed. And then when I wake up, I just decide, don't worry, be happy. I start like that. Now, it doesn't always work, but that is enough to kind of shift it a little bit. And I want to say, if you have like a real full-blown like episode, then go with that flow. But if it's just a little bit, just kind of do a few things to, catch yourself. And recondition yourself or reprogram your attitude. Because many times these little periods of blah that want to kind of get to you, once you get through them, that's when the sun starts shining and your whole trip turns magical. It's funny how that always happens. Like it's the darkest before the dawn or whatever. But that is what happens a lot of times. So that is really many times what's really going on with your blahs. So that's my personal insight that I can share. So those are my tips, really.
Okay, Astrid, we're getting here time to where we're going to close out the show. So I want to know, it's a little bit of a cliche. We've all heard it, the I need a vacation from my vacation. But in a little bit of what you were just referring to, there is some truth to that. I know that one of the things I know from your travels and I've learned from you a lot is that you build in a lot of recovery time when you get home. And I was wondering if you could share how you do that and maybe even talk a little bit about, is there such a thing as post-travel blues?
Unfortunately, I think many travelers experience this phenomenon. You think you should come home rejuvenated, recharge, but that doesn't happen really until probably about day 3 of you returning home. And especially for older travelers, it just takes a while to reorient yourself into being back home, getting through being dead tired and everything. So it usually takes about 3 days to re-enter your own culture, okay? Because, and you ask, why does this happen? Because it doesn't make sense, but this is why it happens. First of all, you're totally out of your routine. And, you know, people need routines to stay balanced, to stay healthy in mind, body, and spirit, basically. So when you're traveling, everything, your routine is shot. You know, you might have a little routine somewhat. When you get there, you're going to go to bed by 10 and wake up every morning by 7 and take a bath at night and brush your teeth in the morning, whatever is some semblance of the routine that you do at home. But basically, your routine is shot. You've overdone it physically because you've walked too much, you've eaten too much, you've drank too much stimulation, not enough rest. So your body basically is super tired and exhaustion has set in. And it's really... I know, I just talked to a friend of mine from 30 years back, and he said he went to Greece with his wife and went to Medjugorje, and it was kind of like a faith-based trip, and he went to a lot of real spiritual sites, and they did a lot of walking and everything. He said, I even went up to the Acropolis. He said, it took me 10 days to recuperate from that trip. He said, oh, that was tough. He said that 36 hours of flying home and all that kind of stuff. But yes, I mean, you've hit a point of exhaustion. So, you know, you got to get through that. Okay. So that's one of the reasons why you need a vacation from a vacation. I mean, you have way overdone it. Then also you feel let down when you come home to your daily life. That's another reason why people, they just get kind of like, you know, they just need to get away again.
Well, so, I mean, some people don't go because of that feeling when they get home.
It's true. It's true. So I felt like I had to mention it. The most important tip is to give yourself a couple of days of recuperation when you get back. Don't go back to work the next day if possible. Get home on a Friday and then go to work on a Monday. So you have enough time to sleep. You can, you know, recover pretty much from your jet lag. You can unpack, do some laundry. I love to do laundry. I don't know what it is about laundry. I was probably some kind of laundry person in a former life, if that's the case. But I love to do laundry. It just relaxes me so much. And my kids love to do laundry. When they get in a bad mood, they just do laundry. You know, and then you have enough time to call friends and relatives, tell them you're back home. It was a great trip. I'm still tired, but I'm getting through it. And this is everything I did. And God, you know, I wish you could have come and everything like that. But basically, these tips will help you recover from your trip and get you more ready to get back into your routine so you'll be, but they won't cure you for the post-travel blues. And many people who love to travel, myself included, can experience this condition. You know, post-travel depression, which is basically like feeling sad when you get home after a trip, actually can start a few days before you come home because you start dreading the thought of your daily routine. You were so happy sitting in the bistros. That's me. You know, or you loved hiking all these new trails in foreign lands. All these interesting new people that you met. You know, you want to still stay there and get to know them even better. During your travels, you experience so many new things. And what this happens is you evolve and you really do change. You know, your perspective on many things that you used to think, you know, you liked or was right or whatever, it's elevated. And they're really, it's on a higher, different level. A lot of times you actually feel transformed as a person. I mean, I don't mean to get so sounding like a guru talk, but it's really, and everything and everyone at home is the same as when you left it. And so you feel disconnected and you feel disconnected around your friends and family. Because of how you've you've evolved, you've changed, what you've experienced. So, you know, this will kind of upset you. It's a natural thing. You just feel, you know, like, well, I'm stuck here, you know, or something like that. This will subside, but it really is a common reason why a lot of people feel blue when they first reenter daily life. So expect it. Really expect it. You go to work and you think, God, these people are so, you know, just expect it because that will pass. You know what I'm saying? Before you know, you'll be out and go and have a couple of glasses of wine and you'll love them to death and everything like that. But it does happen. So here are my tips to deal with post-travel blues. Number one, the most important thing almost is don't get back into your daily routine the next day. Give yourself ideally 3 days to re-enter your daily reality, really. Just don't go out into the world. Stay home, unpack, you know, do your washing and whatever. Let yourself sleep until you wake up. You're fully rested. I mean, I remember one time, and I can't remember where it was from, what trip, but I actually slept 24 hours. Oh, yeah. I was so out of it. I was really almost like dead. And my husband kept coming in and he said, you want to wake up now? You okay? I just want to sleep. Close the door. Turn off the light. Don't bother me.
She's breathing. I'm out of here.
so, yeah, it took that long to get over it. So, you know, you should just let yourself sleep because that's the number one thing you need to do is to get your biorhythms and everything back into your time zone. Then number three, pamper yourself. This is what I love to do. That's why I like to give myself 3 days. Hot baths. I love those. A lavender, Epsom salt baths that I soak in. I'll wash my hair, do my fingernails, my toenails. I mean, I'll get in my favorite robe. I might even drag myself on the second day to get a massage. I mean, I just really completely pamper myself. So that helps me. It really does. I don't feel as sad that I'm not in Paris or whatever. I just feel a lot better when I pamper myself. Okay. And number four, catch up with family and friends. That's a lot. That's important. You know, when you share what you did, most of the time they like to hear it. Some of the time they don't, or they're jealous or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You are sharing your experience, and it's not your responsibility to receive it. You know, you can't control how anybody receives it, but that's part of really why you took the trip. It's part of sharing life, and so that's very good to get you back into the swing of where you really do live in reality, as well as over those post-travel blues. Unpack your souvenirs, you know, put them places where you think you'll enjoy them. My house is completely cluttered, but I still do enjoy them. Another thing is I always like to buy clothes because I love clothes, it's pitiful, or wearables. And so do wear those. Don't let yourself buy anything that you're not going to wear. I have to keep telling myself that, but that's true. Like I bought 10 caftans when I went to Morocco. I gave a lot of them to my family and friends, but I still probably have about 4 and I haven't worn them lately. And I keep thinking, oh, when am I going to get to wear this? You know, and I love them. They're just exquisite, you know, but wear these things as much as you can because they're going to give you happy thoughts about your travels. I can't help it. Number six, journal your thoughts after you get home. If you're not journaling when you're on the road, which I do like to do myself, and I highly recommend, you know, if you're feeling kind of down or you're having these issues, write it down. Mm-hmm. The good stuff, the bad stuff, what you're feeling, all this kind of thing. This will help keep the whole trip, the memory alive. It'll help you get closure with, you know, what you've experienced and what's going on inside of you. And, you know, it really will help you get through the blue feeling. Next is develop a hobby. that inspired you from the trip? Like, I have this friend that went on the Astrid Travel Club's trip to Marrakesh, and she's a vegetarian, so she's real particular about what she eats. She fell in love with Moroccan cuisine. She loved the spices. She liked how they prepared everything. She took a cooking class, went on a food tour. She bought a tagine. Now she's cooking, you know, doing all kinds of things that she learned when she was in Marrakesh. And, you know, this is part of really the whole enrichment of her trip and to help her keep it alive and not be depressed because she's not there. Because now, look, she knows how to cook this way, and she loves to eat this way.
Wow.
So, you know, it's
cool.
It enriches your life. It so do those things and keep those, you know, if you learned how to do a certain kind of garden technique, or you went to see a garden and you liked the way this bed was done, do it at your house. I was going to share, I remember when I was very young and I went to Europe, and they used to use a sheet under the blanket, and then the blanket, the sheet on top of the blanket, and then they had like the down cover or whatever. And I thought, oh, is that something? Because we only have a sheet and a blanket and then a bedspread. You know, but they had all these little things. I thought, but I am going to do sheet, blanket, sheet. Okay. And then number 8, look at your city as in a new perspective. They talk about this phenomenon of taking staycations now. But, you know, explore your city like you're a traveler.
Mm.
Try new restaurants. Visit things that you haven't taken the time to see. There are museums there, I bet you, in your city you've never been to. Even though you think you're not interested in it, you know, take time to go do it. You know, get more, even more connected to your city. And this will also make your own place come alive. So use those things that you've done to make a destination come alive where your home is. Don't neglect that, okay? So basically, I say here is develop a new appreciation of where you live. You know, your family, your friends, and all the good fortune that is inherent to your home city. So, Catherine, you know, I think it's time to wrap this extra long episode up. You know, we focused on the blahs and really some of the, what I call the personal underbelly of travel. But I really do hope that some of my poignant commentary has been helpful. Some things that, you know, make travel unpleasant, you really can't change or avoid. But there's one thing you can always shift, and that is definitely your attitude. And I'll close with saying a positive, open-minded perspective maintained no matter the circumstances when traveling will ensure you have memorable experiences when expectations don't live up to reality. So, listeners, if you've enjoyed this broadcast, or you benefited from tuning in, give us a like or a share. And likewise, subscribe to Solo Travel Talk, because when you subscribe, our podcast is broadcast to a larger audience worldwide. Thanks for listening.
Thank you to the Astrid Travel Club for sponsoring this episode of Solo Travel Talk. I think everybody's expectations are now properly managed. We look forward to having you tell us all about your hassle-free travels now that you have experienced the Hassle-Free Travel series. Thank you so much, Astrid, for all of your expertise. And thank you, listeners. And we'll see you next time on Solo Travel Talk.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.